Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show. On 98.5, The Sports Hub.
10 seconds left. Gardner, right circle, Marner shoots, blocked. The Bruins paddle it up the left side and out to center ice. And as they've done all season long, winning without key players in their lineup, today victorious without Patrice Bergeron. Your final tonight at the Air Canada Center. Bruins 3, the Leafs 1. Saturday night, the Bruins have a chance to end this series in Boston.
Welcome into a Sports Hub Hockey Show playoff edition. As we get you ready for Game 5 of the Bruins and Leafs tonight, we got the gang here in the Town Fair Tire Studios this morning. We'll be here until 11 o'clock. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, you just heard on the call there of the end of Game 4. Bob Beers, of course, joins him on the broadcast and joins us here this morning as well. Fresh back from Toronto, looking sharp this morning, guys. Good to see you.
Good to be back. Good to be back. Would have liked to have been back with the sweep, but I know, given losing Game 3, you take what you got. So it was a good bounce back, especially without Patrice Bergeron in the lineup, and that was the big storyline coming in. Right before the game, it was announced that he wouldn't play. You know, there was a couple of warning signs, I guess, the day before, but when Bruce Cassidy was asked about it in the morning, it sure sounded like he was going to be able to play. So some things changed, and that's to be expected, I guess, especially this time of year.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. Like, was there any inkling? Because I didn't have, I was, look, I'm not up there, obviously. I got home, and flipped on the game, and, hey, Patrice Bergeron didn't take warm-ups. He's not going to play tonight. And I, what happened there?
Well, there were a few signs, and I think that's what Bob was alluding to. The day before at practice, you saw Riley Nash working a little bit in the bumper position and taking some spots where Bergeron would normally be. And Bruce Cassidy was asked about it, but he played it off. And so nobody thought the wiser. And then because of the Selke nominations coming out on the morning of the game, Bergeron came out and was asked to comment basically about being nominated for a Selke again. And then obviously the game that was in front of him. So there were maybe a few signs, but it wasn't a clear picture that he wasn't going to play.
And yet, as we heard in the clip, the Bruins win without one of their key players in the lineup again. And this has been something that they've dealt with during the course of the season. It's something that they just dealt with, toward the end of the season for the better part of a month. Patrice Bergeron wasn't in the lineup, and they managed to have success without him and without other guys in the lineup. And I think that's part of, look, you play an 82-game season, you're going to deal with injuries, you're going to deal with adversity. It helps to make you the team that you are going to be in the postseason, and I think that's ultimately what we're seeing from this team, is that they've been able to overcome a lot and nothing really seems to faze them, whether it's being behind in a game by a couple of goals or whether it's going into an important game with, three or four important guys missing off of their roster.
Yeah, that's why, when you hear people say, well, the regular season doesn't mean anything. Good teams are going to make the playoffs. The regular season doesn't mean anything. It means a lot. It means, it's how you deal with some of that adversity that you're alluding to. It's how you come together as a team and handle different situations. It's how the younger guys develop. It's how, there are so many things that come together during a full 82-game season, the ups and downs. You got to go through it together in order to become a team, or you don't, or you split, mm-hmm. and now, you're not making the playoffs, or you're not equipped to handle some of the adversity that comes up and arises. So the regular season means a lot. The journey means a lot. And, how a coach manages his players throughout a year. There's just so many things that come into it. And then how are you ready to face the playoffs and be ready to go once that puck is dropped in round one? And then the little adjustments that are made in every game and the adjustments that are made throughout a series and handling, different things that are thrown at you by the other team. And, I think the case in point was game four where, yeah, Riley Nash steps in. Sean Crowley moves up in the lineup a little bit into the third line role. Noel Chari goes down to the fourth line center role or moves over to the fourth line center role. Grizzlick gets back in. But there were adjustments made in that game by the Bruins, whether it be through the neutral zone, whether it be certain areas that, they had to be ready for with Toronto. And they were able to handle those, plus the fact that they didn't play great in the first period and a half of that game. You know, they were fighting to find their game. Yeah, Toronto's going to have something to do with it, but the Bruins as a whole, you could tell they were just a little bit off. You know, it was turnovers or whether it was, you know, angles and expecting pucks to get to you. They weren't getting to you. The ice wasn't great, and it took them maybe a period and a half, maybe even a little bit longer to find their game. And I think it came a little bit before Marchand's goal, late in the second, started to turn a little bit before that. But the fact was they weren't on top of their game through the first period. So it doesn't have to be perfect, but you got to battle your way through it. And then they had an outstanding third period.
And then they can rest on their structure.
Big saves, by the way, along the way.
Tuukka Rask was fabulous, but what we've talked about you know, basically all season long is that the foundation of the team's game is the way that they defend. And as Bob mentioned, I think it was probably Marchand's spin move in the right circle that he lifted over the top of Freddie Anderson, short side and wide. That's where you could start to see the game change. But it was their ability to block shots, to keep things to the outside, to clear any rebound opportunities. And Rask didn't really leave many. They could sort of rest on that once they started to gather their game and get the lead.
Yeah, plus the big saves at the right time, right? And I shortchanged him on one of the two-on-ones. There was a two-on-one in the first period, Marlowe. There was a two-on-one in the second period with Dominic Moore. He ended up picking off a puck on the boards and attacking him with a quick two-on-one. And, of course, the Marner breakaway. All that came with the game was still very tight and before Marchand had made it 2-1.
You know, again, kind of getting back to the as you build the team during the course of the season, you get into a position in the postseason where Patrice Bergeron is, and we don't know exactly when the team knew that he wasn't going to play, but you assume if everyone's being forthright that it was shortly before the game. Riley Nash is going to go into that spot. You know that going in, right? Because you've already dealt with that situation during the course of the regular season. And we've talked about him, and when he got hurt toward the end of the regular season and missed the start of the playoffs, you know, we've talked during the course of this season about how important a guy that he has become on this team. And I don't think going into the season a lot of people would have necessarily felt that way, but he proved himself during the course of this season, and especially when Bergeron was out and they were able to keep the production going with Marchand and Pasternak with him in that position later on in the season when he got that opportunity. That's why, you know, when Bergeron goes down suddenly the other night, it's like, okay, well, we know that you can plug Riley Nash in there and still have success with that line, which is huge to be able to have that versatility in your lineup.
Bob did a great job of charting that after the game when we were on with Adam Jones, and there's been an evolution for Riley Nash in the way that he's played this year, because at the beginning of the season, he was thrown into that spot. It was a difficult position. It was a lot of responsibility. And then when you had the second opportunity when Bergeron went out of the lineup and you elevated Riley Nash into that role, they didn't give him quite as many responsibilities. They didn't necessarily have him on the power play, but they had him chewing up a lot of the big minutes and a lot of the big matchups. And his game, I think for the first 3 or 4 months of the season, you steadily saw it grow. He put up career numbers both in goals and points overall. So when the opportunity presented itself again, he was even better prepared for that opportunity. Then you had to put him on the power play because they needed somebody in the bumper position because the Bruins had so many key injuries down the stretch. But to go back to what Bob had alluded to when we talk about adversity during the regular season and what the regular season means, I think one of the terms that you'll start to hear as the playoffs get deeper is that team is battle-tested. And the Bruins were really from the early portion of the season because, as we've documented for months here, their season could have gone in a different direction by the middle of November. But they were able to steel themselves and to galvanize as a group how they needed to play, and that has transferred itself here into the playoffs.
Let's talk a little bit about kind of how that game developed. As you said, Bob, for you know a good chunk of the first half of that game, the Bruins seemed like they were having trouble finding it. They weren't generating scoring chances. They, you know, Toronto was kind of controlling play. A lot of zone time for Toronto over the course of that game, and in some really, you know, some long stretches where the Bruins got kind of hemmed into their own zone. And we saw some stretches of that, obviously, in the game before that as well. What did Toronto find after those first couple of games? Because the two games in Toronto had a much different feel than, obviously, the two games here in Boston did.
Well, they found a level of desperation, first of all. They weren't very good in the first couple of games here. They were at times. They were at times. I mean, sometimes the score can be a bit misleading. You know, it can be a little bit closer than what the score indicates. But they, you know, they found their legs. I think that I do think that – so they're going to be momentum swings throughout a game. And – how do you handle them as a team? I think the Bruins are far more equipped, far better equipped to handle when they're stuck in their defensive zone because they don't panic and there's not a lot of running around. You're going to get some chances. Toronto's one of the best offensive teams in the league in the regular season. Mm-hmm. They can score. They can generate chances. They're a fast team. They're a quick team. They've got some guys who can generate chances. I think you try to limit those chances. And you try to keep the majority of them on the outside the dots, not in the middle of the ice. You know, where does Pekanec score from? He scores from the middle of the ice. That's on a really good second effort play by Mitch Marner. A lot of Austin Matthews' opportunities this series, when he's had them, have been from outside the dots. Even the goal he scored was outside the dots, but it was Nylander charging down the middle and getting, you know, everybody thinking that he might shoot that. You got to freeze his Rask for a second as well, and it's just a perfect shot by a world-class player. They have contested everything for him. There was a sequence in the third period where he was coming down the middle of the ice, and I think it really illustrates what they're trying to do with him. He's coming down the middle of the ice. He finally gets some room through the neutral zone, and as soon as he hits the offensive blue line, he's got Pastrnak bothering him from behind with the stick. He's got a defenseman stick in front of him, and he tries that, you know, that drag wrist shot that he has, and he fans on it. And whether somebody got a stick on it or not, I couldn't really tell. But when you look at that, there's three guys around him. So they're not going to, they don't, you know, I expect him to be good tonight, but they have not let him beat them. He had the goal in game three. I get that. But they've really made it a conscious effort to take him away, to take Nylander away. Marner's been outstanding this series. Marlowe's had a good series as well. But that line. So I'm actually, the formula's worked by trying to shut down Matthews and then take your chances with the next guys. So I would imagine that's the way they go tonight. But, you know, there's a sense that maybe they shift that and try to take Marner's line away. And you know, if Kadri's coming back today, now who knows what that line looks like. Sure. If they keep, I don't think that they would keep Lekanitz there, but maybe they do and give it a whole different look. But that's one of the keys for the Bruins, that I think that they're well-equipped once they are in their own zone. It's not ideal. You don't want to be there. A little bounce here and there, and all of a sudden, you know, they're scoring a couple of goals. It bounces off of a leg or off of a stick, and it takes a funny bounce. But when they're in their zone, they're pretty comfortable playing defensively.
And that's a big contrast, because if you look at the Leafs, and obviously the two teams are built differently, if they have to be in their end for an extended period of time, it's a fire drill.
Well, yeah, and look, we know they have some deficiencies defensively on that team.
And they also
and
have
been
some
exploited
issues
at times during the course of this series.
If you look across the four games, Tuukka Rask has been by far the better goaltender than Freddie Anderson.
No question about that. We're going to talk about Tuukka more coming up as we get started here on this edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. 617-779-0985. Join us.
Rask, the right hand save. Let's go!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
617-779-0985, the number to join us here on The Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. One of the big stories of the game, obviously, minus the Bergeron injury that kept him out of game four, is the play of Tuukka Rask. Tuukka with a tremendous performance, especially as we were talking about earlier, in the first half of that game where the Bruins were, you know, struggling to get things going offensively and the Maple Leafs were keeping that puck in the Bruins zone. He had to come up with some big saves, and he has throughout the course of this series come up with some big saves. And even in the loss in game three, you know, it felt like at times like he came up with some saves to try to keep that game a lot closer than it could be. And you know, there's always going to be questions about Tuukka in some people's minds. He's playing like a world-class goaltender in this series. And as you said, Judd, There's no question he's outplaying the guy at the other end right now through four games.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. I think that goal that Freddie Anderson allows in the first 28 seconds of game four, that changes the tempo. Yes, the Leafs started to regather themselves at that point, but it changes things for the Bruins when you get that goal early on. And two of those goals have gone in a similar area. Now, I know Chara banked his in coming down the left wing boards, but that was high blocker side, both short side goals against Freddie Anderson. The other thing that he has done during the course of this series is he's given up a lot of rebounds on a lot of opportunities. Pucks are getting kicked back in some pretty juicy areas. And the other thing that Rask has done that has helped out, in addition to making some key saves at key times, he's helped his defense trying to play that puck and keep things moving. Because I think one of the issues for the Bruins in Game 4, whether it was the ice or an issue fighting the puck for the first 30 minutes, was puck management. And the Leafs were able to pounce on some opportunities, keep the puck in for greater amounts of time. If the Bruins were unable to clear it out, or if they were unable to go tape to tape to get it out, it feeds their transition game. And that's one of the things that the Bruins have talked about, whether they were facing the Tampa Bay Lightning, who has a similar dangerous offense, that you don't want to feed their transition game. The same is pretty much the case with the Toronto Maple Leafs. But Rask has done an excellent job of helping things out, keeping things clean and quiet out in front, making key and timely saves, helping his defense trying to exit those pucks.
He's been terrific. He's been terrific. And not only that, but it's worth noting the guys in front of him, as Bob said, there's a lot of shots that are trying to keep him to the outside and all that. The blocked shots, I think it was 27 blocked shots in game four. I think there might have been 22 the game before that.
Yeah, and that's good. The only flip side to that is Toronto had a lot of attempts. So
right.
Got
I think
the puck
Toronto
the
attempted 70 yeah. attempts in game four. Yeah, you'd like to see that number come down.
That shows you where the bulk of the play was, especially early in that game and even in the third period. Now you've got a 2-1 lead. You extend it to 3-1. The Bruins, if you're blocking shots in the third period, I know Wingles blocked a couple. Shortchange guys. I know Heinen blocked one. There were several blocks in that third period, but they didn't give Toronto much in the third. That was as solid a third period as you want from a team in the lead going into the third, especially on the road. They extend the lead on Jake DeBrusco on a beautiful pass from David Krejci after Krejci blocked a shot, by the way, and got going the other way. So that's a 2-on-1. So 2 2-on-1s that the Bruins converted on that end up giving them the 3-1 lead. Lockdown defense in the third period. They just didn't give Toronto a lot of room there to try to get something going. And when they did, they were good at defending.
Well, Bruce Cassidy talked about after the game the defensive approach. Toronto loves those stretch passes, loves to get that puck.
That was an adjustment as well.
And he said, look, we decided we're going to see the play in front of us as opposed to the play that's going behind us. And so, let's pull back a little bit. Let's clog things up, a little bit closer to our net and not give them that opportunity.
What that might do sometimes as well when you're backing up, especially if you're the defenseman and trying to keep everything in front of you, if they're flying a guy or two, that opens up the middle of the ice, right? That opens up the gap between the defenseman and the forwards. So that's why it's really important for the forwards to be coming back as well. And they made some adjustments in the neutral zone, especially for game four. At least it was noticeable in game four about how they wanted to play in that area. And they were a little bit more conservative in that area to make sure that guys didn't get behind them. Now, that being said, Toronto still generated 2 2-on-1s. They still had a breakaway. Sure. When the shot's being taken from the point by Torrey Krug and it's a wrist shot going to the net or a shot that looks like it might be blocked, they're taking off. And that was Marner going right up the middle. So that weak side defenseman has to be aware, and he's got to get himself – he's got to be aware of that guy flying the zone. And, they fell asleep for a split second, and all of a sudden, bam, he's gone. And that's just communication. That's just awareness. And, they know that that's what they want to do. So, and unfortunately, Rask came up with a save. But that's a critical save at a big time in the game. When the score is still 1-1, second period, and all of a sudden Marner's going on a breakaway.
Let's go to the phones. We got Maria in Watertown up first this morning. Hey, Maria.
Hi, good morning, guys. How are you today?
Good morning.
I just wanted to touch on something that you guys have already talked about, which is Tuukka Rask's play in particularly the second period of the game the other night. He saved the Bruins' bacon, and I think that's the kind of goaltending that his critics have been waiting for, and kudos to him, because he was, if not the best player for them the other night, he was the second best player on the ice for the Bees. The other thing I wanted to touch upon was something that occurred in Game 3, and even though the Bruins lost this game, I was so impressed by Zdeno Chara's coaching from the bench when he scored that tying goal, and he gathered together the troops, and just the look of intensity and how everyone was listening and soaking it in. I think that's an intangible that you just can't put a price tag on when it comes to an elite leader like that. And thirdly, the officiating has been less than stellar, and I think I have a lot of NHL coaches who are in these playoffs that would agree with me. If this is the best of the best in these series, then the NHL has a serious problem with its officiating. I don't know what's going on, but starting with the delay of game call, which was, you know, an abomination, and then icing calls that were waved off, I think it's detracting from some of these games. Thank you for the time, and let's see if these guys can close it out tonight and get a little rest. Take care.
All right. Appreciate the call, Maria. I think that, you know, the thing that she brings up with Chara on the bench is not something it feels like we see very often from him in that kind of public display of, you know, motivation. Don't know what happens in the room. Don't know if he's, but you, I think a lot of people look at him and say, this is not a guy who you would consider to be an outward vocal leader. So I think that's why that stood out for Maria, and it stood out for a lot of people the other night to see him kind of doing that on the bench and really kind of kicking everybody in the tail and saying, all right, let's get it going.
I mean, I saw that. I saw the replay of it. I think Nesson had it. Yep. So, I mean, anytime you've got a guy that spent that much time in the league, you know, look, I'll take it back to, I mean, I played with Ray Bourque. Bourque said things when things needed to be said. Mm. You know, he didn't say something just to be heard, you know, just to say something. He said something because they needed to be said. And he led by example for the most part, but there were times where, you know, he speaks up, everybody is listening. And I think
Which
Chara's,
is what makes it effective, right?
Exactly.
Because everybody knows if Chara is talking, like, there's a reason why Chara is doing this. It's not because he just, you know, is looking to get some
no,
camera
it's not,
time
it's not
here.
Idle chatter. It's yeah. not idle, you know. It's not the standard being on the bench. Come on, guys, let's go, guys, let's go, guys. Come on, let's have a good shift here. You know, you hear that from a lot of guys. But, you know, to pull guys in during a commercial timeout and, you know, you better listen. And that part of it is – you know, I can see that from him to pick your spots, when to do it, when not to do it, because I played for or with a guy like that that, you know, did the very same thing. And we had a lot of leaders on the Bruins, you know, in the 2 years that we went to the conference finals, the year we went to the Cup. But, you know, Bourque is your ultimate leader, and he's the guy that, you know, he's going to talk when something needs to be said, and you better believe you're listening.
Just one thing about the officiating, and this is just a sidebar, because obviously, you know, it was an enormous call and a missed call by the officials in Game 3. The NHL already has video in place for a similar situation. So they installed a few years ago, if they think that the puck hits the protective netting behind the net, they can, at the last stop, they can go back on the video and review the play to see if it left the surface. So why can't you institute that for a similar play, like whether or not the puck kicks off the glass and goes into the crowd? It's very easy. The game is going fast. Sometimes you can lose sight of the puck. You already have a mechanism in place for something similar. Why not institute that if you have a question for a delay of game situation, whether or not the puck ticks off the glass and into the crowd? I'd like to see that as a change moving forward, because that had some serious ramifications in Game 3.
Well, I'm never in favor of more replay in any sport, so I can't say that I would be necessarily in favor of that. But
it's already there.
But my issue is that for a call like that, where you should be 100%. And I didn't feel like, I mean, the officials had to, all four of them, get together and talk it out. You're telling me all of them said, oh, yeah, that's clearly straight over the glass. I mean, that's the problem that I had with it is, if you're going to give a team a power play in the playoffs, you better be really sure of it. And I can't imagine that they were. Matt McCarthy's going to give us Sports Hub headlines. Joe Haggerty will join us coming up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, and Bob Beers. The home of the Bees. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Hockey Show continues. Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, Bob Beers, now being joined in studio by Joe Haggerty, who covers the Bruins for NBC Sports Boston. What's up?
What's going on, Ryan?
Rocking out?
Oh, yeah. Does everybody at home know you're wearing a Philadelphia Eagles hat right now, Ryan? It was screaming out at me when I walked into the studio.
Yeah, I was here on Super Bowl Sunday. I admitted who I was rooting for.
I was going to say, I don't think I heard much of your shows right around the Super Bowl. Yeah. I would have been able to tell, I think. Eagles fan in there screaming to get out.
I was objective, but it was a rough day in my house because my wife is from here and she grew up a Patriots fan. So it was the battle lines were drawn.
Yeah, there were hurt feelings by the end.
There were, yeah. There still are, really. I don't think we're getting over that one for a while. All right, so the Bruins with a 3-1 lead over Toronto, Game 5 coming up tonight. And the question is, Patrice Bergeron, will he, won't he? What do you make of the fact that he was on the ice yesterday?
Well, it's obviously a good sign. As Bruce Cassidy said, it's a positive. I think it bodes well moving forward that it's not it may not be a serious injury, obviously, but if I were the Bruins, and obviously the fourth game's the toughest to close out, and you want to take care of business with the Leafs as soon as you can. Like, I understand that, and you don't take anybody lightly, and there's always urgency there. I get all that, but if you're up 3-1 in a series, and if you can get through this game, close out the series, not have to play him if he's fighting through something, give him a few extra days rest. Without pushing him to go back in there, that might be the road that I would go down if I were the Bruins. And that's not knowing exactly what's wrong with him, but just saying, at this point with the upper hand in the series, I don't know that I'd be pushing him to get back, knowing you kind of want to have a long run at this.
Knowing him, he's going to be pushing to get back too. I mean, this is a guy who's played through some pretty horrific things before, which is why when I heard he was going to be out right before Game 4, it's like panic time.
When they had 2 days off in between games, right? That's when it's potentially a little more serious because, you'd figure a couple of days to recover, it might be enough for you to get back in there. And, everything that Patrice Bergeron has played through in his career and how tough he is, the alarm bells start to go off for sure. But, he's back out there skating the day before. He missed the game, skating the day after. Those are both good signs as far as I'm concerned that it's not anything serious.
Your boy Tuukka, stealing a game. In Game 4.
He was excellent.
I know you take a lot of crap about some of the things that you've said about Tuukka in the past, but people shouldn't be surprised that he comes up this big in a playoff game. I mean, it's not like we haven't seen him have games like this before.
Well, in moments when the Bruins really needed it like that, when they really had to find their bearings, not having Patrice Bergeron kind of feeling their way through for the first maybe 30 minutes of that game, the pivotal point that was in the series where if they go back 2-2 to Boston with Bergeron banged up, and Kadri coming back, it's far different than, going back 3-1. That was an extremely important game. And I would say, obviously, his best playoff performance we've ever seen was Game 3 against the Penguins in 2013. 50-plus saves. He was unbelievable in that game. That's really when they closed out that series at the Garden when he was just out of his mind. But as far as big situation in the postseason, big game, important game, a critical game with a lot of pressure on the Bruins and on him, that's the best that I've seen him play in the playoffs with all of the things on the line. And it's the first round, obviously, but, he... Stop and breakaways in the first couple of periods, really calming things down when things were getting a little chaotic in the D zone at times. Certainly seemed like the Bruins made an adjustment where they weren't giving up the stretch pass in the transition, but they were allowing more possession time to the Toronto Maple Leafs. So they were allowed to get in the zone and stir things up a little bit. And he was able to stop everything and keep it calm back there and give them the confidence to be able to find their game and finally break through and score. So I think that's the best I've seen him play in a big game playoff game,
you know, just in his career. Not the best playoff game he's had, but the best big game playoff game he's had.
How much of a difference do you think it makes coming back home tonight? Because the two games that were played here, and, you know, as Bob mentioned earlier, the final score was not necessarily indicative, especially in game one.
Right.
You know, that was a close game for a good chunk of it.
Yep.
The final score not necessarily indicative of how that game went, but they were different games here than they were up in Toronto. So, you know, is Toronto, as we were talking about, you know, they adjusted. Obviously, the Bruins are continuing to adjust. How much of a difference do you think the last change makes and all of that?
Well, it definitely makes a difference, right? You can get your better offensive players out there against the defensive players you want to kind of target and exploit on Toronto. And then, you know, there's some out there. There's some matchups certainly that Bruce Cassidy liked and he went at in the first couple of games. But a lot of it depends on whether Bergeron's playing or not, right? I think the big advantage that they have with that top line being able to do a lot of offensive damage against, you know, the players they want out there for Toronto, I think, you know, they're still good with Riley Nash out there, but some of that goes away if it's Riley Nash offensively anyway, instead of Patrice Bergeron. So I think a lot of it depends, obviously, on whether 37 is playing or not. But in general, yeah, they have the last change. They're going to be able to dictate things a little bit more. I think it'll be a little more physical on the Bruins' end as far as dictating terms. You may see a few more penalties called. You know, a little bit more sort of extracurricular stuff going on. I think a lot of that stuff changes. And it was more like that in the first couple of games than obviously in Toronto, where we saw no power plays, not much special teams, Babcock getting the matchups the way he wanted to and kind of playing out the way they wanted.
Yeah, plus they get Kadri back in the lineup, and right. That's going to be big for them. And where they put him and how they decide to use him. Do they keep Lekanitz in the middle between Marner and Marleau? Do they move Kadri back up there? You're talking about a 30-goal scorer, a guy that could be very effective for you in a lot of different areas. So he changes the dynamic of it. I would expect him to go back between that line if they don't make other line changes to try to free up Austin Matthews. You're going to see a lot of double shifts by Matthews today. You're going to see, you know, and they tried to use that in the third period the other day. So that is going to, you know, do you have Chara out there every time against Austin Matthews? I mean, that's a very real possibility. And Chara and X, you know, whether it's McAvoy, whether it's Kevin Miller, depending on how your D is playing. I mean, Grizzlick took some fewer shifts at different times in that game. So there's a lot of little things that play into it. And you're coming back home, doesn't guarantee you anything, but having that matchup and the chess game between the two coaches is going to be really interesting to watch tonight.
And I'm interested to watch how Matthews and Nylander in particular react tonight. There was a lot of heat on them after game four up there, you know, the defensive mistakes they were making, not being assertive enough with Matthews. He really hasn't been a factor in most of the series, and I do credit Zdeno Chara and Bergeron when he was in, you know, for doing a very good job on them.
Right defenseman as well, because he likes to set up in the left wing circle, and that's where the power play sets up when he's had those power plays. McQuaid had four blocks on him in the first game.
Yep.
Kevin Miller's been in his face. He's had a stick on him. The one time that he got loose just for a second over in the left wing circle to get the shot away, Kevin Miller's stick was, you know, inches from being there to contest that shot and get a piece of it and wasn't quite there in time. That's because Nylander had, you know, come down the middle and the Bruins got caught on a long change or long shift that time. They weren't able to get the puck out on a couple of occasions, and that they were able to get fresh bodies out on the ice and, you know, so, and a perfect shot, obviously. But there's been very few of those open looks. And that's a credit to not just, I mean, Chara's a big part of it, but not just Chara, but you've got, you know, if he likes to set up on that left wing side, especially on the power play, you know, McQuaid, Miller, and when McAvoy's out there as well against him.
And McQuaid's been nails, obviously, with blocking shots and playing tough in this series. He took one off the wrist towards the end of that game, game four, where he was hurting on the bench for a while afterwards, but he just sucked it up. And they all know that, you know, this is the time of year where you got to do that stuff. So big credit to Adam McQuaid.
He's got a goal and an assist in the series, and he's the guy who tries to fire the puck up the wall that Pastrnak is able to get by Jake Gardner to trigger that 2-on-1. Now, he's been excellent during the course of the series. And when you talk about the changes, I think that heading into Toronto, I thought Bruce Cassidy was fairly unfazed by the fact that he did not have the last change. I think it mattered for a guy like Mike Babcock. Well, now the advantage absolutely goes in the Bruins' favor. As Bob alluded to, what do the combinations look like? How is Nazem Kadri deployed? Is William Nylander even playing with Austin Matthews tonight? I certainly think that that is a valid question at this point, because Nylander is not helping Matthews at all. So who does Babcock take away or get away from certain matchups? How does that happen tonight? It'll be a lot harder for him to do when he doesn't have the last change here at the Garden.
right, Joe Haggerty is joining us here in studio. We will continue with him coming up. More of your calls as well at 617-779-0985 here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show. We've got Joe Haggerty joining us in studio from NBC Sports Boston. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers here with you until 11 o'clock, and we'll get to your calls here coming up at 617-779-0985 in just a few minutes.
Have you heard from Maria yet?
Yep.
Oh, yeah? What'd she have to say this morning?
Excited about Tuca.
Good.
Not excited about the officiating.
yeah, I understand that.
But you know what? Look, the Bruins have not gotten a lot of calls, but at the same time, there haven't been a lot of calls.
Right, neither have the Leafs. In the two games up in Toronto, they were, as Bruce Cass, I asked him about that yesterday, and he said they were pretty cleanly played games, like, you know, two teams just playing hard against each other and, you know, not going over the line, so there weren't a lot of opportunities for penalties to be called. And obviously, I think that's part of the game plan for Toronto, right? They want to stay away from the power play for the Bruins that's been super red hot since the beginning of March and been a big weapon in the first few games of the series. But
it's a game plan for the Bruins, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't underestimate Toronto's power play.
But they're missing a big piece with Kadri out. Now
sure
he comes back,
yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah. But that's, I mean, you know, even the first game, they had some really good looks.
Yep.
That thing, you know, could have turned a little bit.
It felt to me like every time Toronto got on the power play early in the series, it was like it was nail-biting time. Like they felt really dangerous.
I guess when you look at it, though, right, both teams have super high-powered power plays. But the advantage special teams-wise that the Bruins have is that their penalty kill is much better than Toronto's. Yeah. So, you know, you do have an advantage if it does become a penalty-filled game because your penalty kill is much better.
But the officiating, you know, I don't care what team you are in the playoffs, you have to play beyond the officiating. I'm talking about the linesmen and the referees. There are going to be some calls that you don't like, that don't go your way. How do you respond? That's the adversity that only gets magnified because of the emotion that happens in the playoffs. And the teams that can't play beyond it are playing golf early.
Well, and that's part of what Bruce Cassidy said after that call. You say, look, it's early in the game. You got to get past that.
You can't allow a goal 7 seconds into the power play after
and
you take a tough call.
Like, if they kill off the penalty, we're not still talking about it almost a week later.
And I'm not saying that they were fazed by that necessarily, because David Backes came on in that first intermission right after that call was made, and he basically echoed the fact, hey, we've just got to play beyond it. That stuff is going to happen. We've got to be able to kill that off. James Van Riemsdyk makes a great play. Pucks gets to the front of the net. He's got both of their power play goals in the series. Nobody else has been able to register. But those are things that are going to happen. Hopefully the Bruins finish it off tonight and go deep into the playoffs, but this is going to happen, and you're going to have to be battle-tested. The word comes up again, or the term comes up again. You're going to have to play beyond some of those opportunities in order to win games in advance.
Yeah, for the sake of the league and the officials, I hope that exact thing does not happen again, though, where a puck hits the glass, goes over the glass, and they call delay a game, because that was a bad look on them to make that call. As Bruce Cassidy said, clearly they guessed, because everybody saw the replay, and it was the wrong call, and all three of them conferred and ended up making that call. So that's a brutal mistake to make in a playoff game. You can't do that.
Bruce Cassidy talked a little bit about Charlie McAvoy's game yesterday, and in saying that, you know, he doesn't feel like he's been able to put together a complete game to this point. He's coming off of an injury, obviously a serious injury. How has he looked to you so far in this series? And you know, to hear, look, Bruce Cassidy, we know is very open and honest about his players, and he's not going to shy away. Did that surprise you at all, though, that, you know, he would say that about McAvoy at this point?
Well, I think when I heard him talking about McAvoy, he was referencing the first couple of games and how maybe he was a little slower to start in the series, and that he was better, or he thought he was better in game three. And, you know, he's been, you know, he has been dominant, obviously, and I don't think he's been as good as maybe we saw him at times, even though it was his first experience last year. In that Ottawa series when he was kind of thrown in there. But I think he's been good. They have not scored a lot of goals against that, you know, pairing. It's especially in the Toronto games. You know, I thought they were better in those games, and he was better. But he's not imposing his will on the games, and he's not dominating to any degree. But I think he's been solid enough, put it that way.
He set such a high bar.
Sure.
I think that's where you have to start with. But I sat down with Charlie I think between games three and four, and even he will acknowledge he's not all the way back. He feels better. he obviously is excited about getting an opportunity to play in the playoffs, and he's trying to take in the moment. But his game at certain points, he will admit to you, has been a little bit uneven. Hopefully, the deeper that the Bruins go, the better he becomes. Because one of the things that's been noticeable watching Charlie all season long, and Bruins fans certainly got a glimpse of this last year in that first-round series against the Ottawa Senators, this is a guy who can rise to the moment. And I think as the games become more impactful and have greater gravity and weight, Charlie will be better.
Thanks for coming in, Hags.
Thank you.
Good to see you as always.
Should be a good one tonight.
You think they think we close it out tonight?
Yeah, I think the Leafs are done.
All right. There you go. We will continue with your thoughts coming up right off of the top of the hour here at 617-779-0985. Matt McCarthy gives us Sports Hub headlines and then another hour of the Sports Hub Hockey Show coming up. 98.5 The Sports Hub. Hour number two here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. They're one of Tuukka Rask's big moments from the other night. 9.26 save percentage for Rask so far in the four games of this series, and more importantly, three wins in four games, which is ultimately what he will be judged by. But playing very well, and the team is benefiting from it after those two games up in Toronto. Coming home with a 3-1 series lead, and game five tonight, 8 o'clock face-off, so 7:30 pregame show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, who will be calling the game tonight, of course, are joining us here in hour number two, and we'll get to your calls at 617-779-0985 with your thoughts on the series thus far. We touched on it a little bit in hour number one, guys, but Nazem Kadri's return tonight. He has sat out for the last 3+ games of this series. As you mentioned, Bob, this is a 30-goal scorer, back-to-back 30-goal seasons for him for this Maple Leafs team. So, you know, this is this was a big loss. As much as we talked about Patrice Bergeron's loss in Game 4 being big for the Bruins, this has been a big missing piece for the Leafs here over the last three games.
Yeah, he's also more than capable defensively, not just a one-dimensional player.
One of their better two-way players, yeah.
And, you know, he can infuriate you if you're a coach. I think certain things that he does or doesn't do out there. But in the end, you know, he's got a ton of skill. He's got the ability to make plays. He's got the ability to score. And he can play a physical brand of hockey as well. But I think he got too caught up in the moment, not just the last hit on Wingles, more even early in the game. He's running around trying to hit guys. He's running out of position trying to hit guys. And that's kind of what I took from his game one. Like, you know, somebody needed to pull him back and pull the reins back when they saw him out of control there, and it didn't happen for whatever reason, or maybe they tried and it didn't happen. I don't know, because he can run pretty hot at times. So you know, whether you agree with the suspension or not, certainly he's not going to agree with it, whatever. That's that was the punishment for him. He's missed the three games. It's hurt his team. The ability to take some of the pressure off of Matthews if he's out there, if he's playing his game and out there, that is big for them. So getting him back is going to be a big boost for them if he's ready to play and his mind's in the right place. If it's not, then it's just going to hurt them again.
Well,
they're trying to stay out of the box.
Sure. it'd be interesting to see, too, that, you know, how the suspension impacts his game. Like, coming back off the suspension, is he... that might help get him back in line as far as that goes. Maybe he realized, okay, I can't be out here running around, because if I do something stupid again, my season's going to be over.
Yeah, and, I mean, only he can answer that. So, I mean, his play will answer that, you know, not his words. So, you know, we'll see what he brings here tonight. I expect him to be good. I've expected the Leafs seem to be good on a number of occasions. You know, you expect them to have an answer or a bounce back game. You know, did they have it in Game 3? Yeah. Did they have it at times in Game 4? Absolutely. But the Bruins stuck with it and stayed with it and end up getting the win. So, you know, it's right now, you know, you get him back. Okay, fine. You know, I want to see the Bruins beat them with him in the lineup. I want to see the Bruins beat them at their best here on home ice today. I mean, that's what you want to see. And it might not be perfect for 60 minutes, but, you know, that's... doesn't matter who they put out there. It doesn't matter the situations that they have. You know, you make sure that, you know, you're winning each shift, and that's what you look to do. And it's not going to work that way, obviously, but that's the way. That's what you look to do coming into a game.
Bring your best game to the Garden tonight. There were three teams on home ice that had a chance to close out series. Only one was able to do that, and that was the Winnipeg Jets last night.
And, you know, obviously, at this point in the season, anytime you get a chance to close it out, especially early on in the series, and maybe try and grab an extra couple of days rest, not have to travel back up to Toronto, and you know, and burn a little more jet fuel, that helps too. Joe is up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, guys. Nice show. Appreciate your call. I just want to make a quick point. Even though Zdeno Chara is the physical captain in this team, really, to me, the heart and soul of the team and the cog to the team is Patty Bergeron. There's no question. And for the Bruins to overcome the, you know, mental aspect of not having him out there and win that game was incredible. And the other quick point I wanted to make is the fourth game of the series, I thought, even though the Bruins lost, they outplayed the Leafs and they played a better game than the game that they won up there in Toronto. I think there was one sequence where they rang the post, the crossbar, like twice in a minute. And I just want to get your thoughts on that. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate the call, Joe. I mean, there was certainly the third.
Yeah, he had his game slipped there. It was game three.
Game three he's
was
talking
the one
that about. The loss in game three. I mean, the third period, certainly. I mean, the Bruins were peppering Anderson, everything down that end of the ice. And they had their opportunities. Can't say they didn't. They couldn't find a way to finish, whether it was Anderson making a ridiculous acrobat save or just guys not able to get the puck on the net when it mattered or whatever. It was just one of those games. And, you know, David Pastrnak after the game was terrific. And, you know, some days you wake up and it's going to be a great day, and some days you wake up and it's going to be, and I can't say the word he used, but it's going to be more of a crappy day, and we just had one of those.
Yeah, I mean, when Pastrnak, when the great save occurred, it was that was with the net pull with Tuukka pulled,
right?
And the score was 4-2, so it was a 2-goal game at that time. Still a phenomenal save. Not the chances that they had on the power play where they hit the post. He hit the post on one, and Marchand came down the right wing side. Anderson got a piece of it. Then it went off the crossbar. There was another play in front with Krug, I believe. So Heinen hit the post in the second period. You know, there was ample opportunity. So I don't know if the Bruins were the better team in Game 3. I'm not going that far. Maybe they were just slightly, but it was a very winnable game. Let's put it that way. In Game 3, they could have easily walked away with the win there. And, you know, had it not been for a couple of breaks Toronto's way, which it. Law of averages, you expect it to kind of work out
that way.
There
were a lot of breaks that went the Bruins' way in the first couple of games.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, you look at it and, you know, you just kind of move on. I mean, if you're generating those chances, I mean, DeBrusk passed to Krejci in front after DeBrusk went end-to-end.
Mm-hmm.
Was, you know, a thing of beauty. DeBrusk has been really good in this series. You know, so there's a partial 2-on-0. The 2-on-0 between Rick Nash and Pastrnak wasn't like an open ice 2-on-0, but they ended up behind the Toronto D on the power play, the pass over to Pastrnak for the one-timer where he hit the post. So there were plenty of opportunities. It didn't go their way that game. And credit to them for, you know, okay, we're not going to get frustrated. We're going to find a way here in this game four, which they did. And even early in the game, they didn't get – if they were getting frustrated, it didn't show. They were just – you know, they kind of stuck with it, and they got the saves when they needed it and were able to, you know, score – be opportunistic on the two-on-ones that they had.
The other thing that he touched on was about Bergeron, whether or not he's the beating heart of the team or it's a guy like Zdeno Chara. I think you've got a number of different guys – who have leadership roles, and it's a terrific room. That's the other thing that we basically charted across the regular season, just how many guys that they can rely on in that room, whether they're leading by example or leading vocally, that have had an impact on this team.
Yeah, and just to Bob's point about the chances, look, if you have those types of chances in a game with the talent level that's on this team, you know, any other night, some or all of those are going in the net. Right. It just, again, that's kind of what Pastrnak's point was, is that, hey, you know what? Sometimes it just, you know, the puck rolls off your stick. Sometimes it hits the post. Sometimes it hits a goalie who's not even looking. You know,
the Bruins don't get enough credit for their offense. And I know Pastrnak's getting a ton of credit for his offense. He's leading the NHL in points right now for the playoffs. But they've also spread out their scoring quite a bit. If you look at the number of guys who have scored or the number of guys who have been involved in plays, that's been, you know, sure, he's got the bulk of it. And, you know, Marchand's up there in points as well. But, you know, when you look up and down, they've gotten contributions from a lot of different guys so far in this series offensively. A number of different goals from different players. So, and that, you know, you look for that to continue. That's been one of their strengths all season is their depth.
I believe they have 11 different guys that have scored. And the other thing, you've got a lot of defensemen who have been involved in one way or another because of the way that the Bruins are trying to play as five-man units. The same cannot be said for the Leafs.
Let's go to Rick in Plymouth. Rick, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. There's so many things I'd love to talk about, but I'll just make two quick points. First of all, I think a Stanley Cup run for the Boston Bruins really hinges on the performance of David Krejci. We got that top line. I mean, they're going to put up points almost every night in Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak. But I think if you look at our other deep cup runs, David Krejci is the most pivotal player where he can perform like a number one center on that second line. When we beat the Canucks, I'm pretty sure he was the leading scorer in the playoffs, either that year or against the Blackhawks. And then my second point was the Leafs are kind of soft. They're a really fast team, arguably the fastest team in the league. Do you think giving Donato a chance if Bergeron's out tonight would be a good idea? I know he didn't look too good in the game he played earlier, but maybe that, with that speed and a little bit more experience under his belt could help us.
I appreciate the call, Rick. I mean, that a lot of people, especially going back to game one when Donato wasn't going to play, have kind of focused on him and getting him his opportunity. The issue, as I see it, is that it's not the right spot for him that they would have available, right? He's not going to play, obviously. He's not going to take Patrice Bergeron's spot in the lineup if Patrice isn't playing. Riley Nash is going to get that. So now you're talking about, you know, Donato playing a third or a fourth line role, and it's not that's really not where you need him to be.
I don't see that as necessarily a fit, especially having won with the lineup that you had in game four. At this point, and the deeper that the Bruins go, Ryan Donato is going to play a role. He's going to help this team somewhere here down the line. If you have to bring him off the ninth floor to do it, either later in this series or later in a subsequent series, hopefully the Bruins are able to close it out here tonight. You know, but the other thing is, I don't know that I would term the Leafs as soft. I think there are a few guys that can play with a little bit of edge. I think Mitch Marner in particular has been a guy who has impressed me. You know, and the Bruins, they spent a lot of time finishing their checks on him in the first couple of games, and he's been able to bounce back, and he's played with a high level of compete. The question is, I think, for the Leafs, and I don't think that Austin Matthews is a soft player by any stretch, but I think what Mike Babcock is urging from his best player is you have to raise your compete level. You have to raise your battle level, and that's certainly a cry and a message that's been sent to a guy like William Nylander. The other thing that he mentioned was about David Krejci, and he's correct on both cases.
Hold that point, because we'll talk a little bit more about him coming up next as we continue and get to more of your calls next at 617-779-0985 here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. 617-779-0985 is the number here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston and Judd Surratt. Bob Beers has taken leave to head over to Morning Skate. Judd will be doing likewise soon, and Billy Jaffe will be in. We're doing like line changes here. It's great. You guys hop
changing
out.
Changing on Jaffe the fly, baby.
Jaffe will be in after 10:30, and we'll talk to him about what's going on with the Bruins and Leafs, but also around the NHL as well, where some of the first round series are wrapping up, and some of them are going a little bit longer than perhaps some would have expected. So, David Krejci, the last caller brought up David Krejci and his performance in the series so far and how important he is to this team. And go back to 2011, the Stanley Cup run, David Krejci's your leading scorer. Go back to 2013, the run to the finals, and David Krejci is your leading point scorer.
He was the leading scorer in the National Hockey League, not just the Bruins.
Right.
He led the NHL playoffs on two different occasions in point scoring. That's an elite group. Like, if you look across the last 10 years or maybe chart it going back 20 years, I mean, you see some Hall of Fame names. Mario Lemieux, Joe Sakic, here in recent vintage, guys like Andrei Kopitar, who helped the Kings win a couple of cups. And I think the bigger point was you need as much balance as you possibly can. We've seen that from the Bruins here in the first round already, where you've got 11 different guys that have hit the goal sheet already. During the regular season, so the Bruins, I want to say, finished sixth in goals for per game. They had 12 different guys register 10 or more goals. If you're just trying to rely on one line, oftentimes you're not going to be able to go that far in the playoffs. You need to have some level of balance. And having a guy like David Krejci, Rick Nash, and Jake DeBrusk, and this is something we talked about, I think, on the first playoff edition of the Hockey Show, that on any other team, that would probably be a top line. Mm-hmm. So the Bruins are blessed with, you know, two different scoring lines that present a danger for any opponent.
You go back to, people will point to this, 2010 when the Bruins blew the 3-0 lead to Philly. David Krejci got hurt in that third game, right? He got hurt, didn't play the rest of the series. It was a totally different series at that point.
David Krejci only played three games last year against the Ottawa Senators. Yep. I don't know necessarily how far that team would have gone last year, but it changes the entire dynamic and how teams are able to shut you down when you don't have that type of a centerman in your lineup.
Let's go to Jay in Boston. Jay, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Morning, boys. Bruce Cassidy, let's go back to last Saturday night's game. The call that he said after the game that he saw the puck hit the glass and everyone else saw it too. I guess he's talking about the players on the bench. You know, maybe people in the stands too. I don't know. But since he was so certain that the officials had blown it, now I think the Bruins could beat the Leafs, but I think they could have a lot more trouble beating both the Leafs and the officials at the same time. I think that Bruce, what he needed to do if he was so certain, is to use his timeout right then. Waste the timeout. The one timeout you get, I think it's worth it because they got no makeup call in that game. And if he had used that and had the players stand up and yell at the officials, between periods, look at the replay, check it out, you blew it, you're getting paid thousands, you made a mistake, we want a makeup call. No, you don't say that, but you say, you know, if Billy's listening, coming in, he could comment on this. What about the idea, thinking outside the box, using his time out there, and
yeah,
having the officials... Here,
Jay, here's the problem.
The officials to do something about that.
All
thank
right.
you, gentlemen.
Here's the problem. Number one, it doesn't make a difference at that point. Number two, later in the game, you might need that timeout. You know, you might be sorry that you gave it up at that point. Look, it's a call that went against you that you didn't agree with. Happens on a fairly regular basis. You kill off the penalty, nobody's talking about it after the fact. They didn't. That's the difference. So ultimately, you know what? If the coach makes a big deal out of it, the players are going to make a big deal out of it. It's going to take you out of your game.
Well, Riley Nash was certainly in the face of the officials at that point.
Yes.
We're not talking about a guy who... we've seen protesting or who is overzealous in that regard during the course of the regular season. And I think he tried to state as clearly as possible that they got that wrong during the course of play. They made the wrong call. That's the end of the story. Toronto scored on the power play. They won game three. Hopefully the officials are better, whether it's that foursome on the ice, whichever game it is, whether it's this series or another, hopefully all four of them are better when that next opportunity presents itself.
All right, let's go to Mark. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Just to piggyback off that, I don't know if you guys mentioned it or not, but, you know, 120 minutes played in Toronto, one power play, one. That's just bad officiating. I'm sorry.
Well, no, but Mark, look. Minus the delay of game call that we're talking
right.
about, you know how many the Maple Leafs had in 120 minutes? They had one other power play. They've had two power plays in two games.
Yeah,
the Bruins have had one power play in two games.
And the refs missed another blatant six guys on the ice in the first period up in Toronto.
They definitely did. Yeah. They definitely
and,
did. But it's not like this has been. You know, there's guys getting mugged all over the ice on one side, and they're not calling it. I would rather them call the series the way that they're calling it. I don't want it to be a power play festival.
Right.
I want them to decide it 5-on-5 if they can.
I think both of these teams. Go ahead.
I look at it as a penalty is a penalty. But what I do want to bring up is David Pastrnak. If this Bruins team happens to go to the finals, this guy's on pace for an MVP of the playoffs.
No question about that. I mean, they're a long ways away from that, but at this pace, he's going to be shattering records.
Oh, he's been fabulous.
He's beating records Wayne Gretzky set, for crying out loud.
He has more points than some teams here early in the season, the way he's played. He's been fabulous. And I think with David Pastrnak, and this, I think, is the most interesting thing, and Bruce Cassidy alluded to this. Yes, he's a stronger player as he's grown, but I think he's more accustomed to the type of checking that he's going to get because he plays with Bergeron and Marchand, and he's been able to find a way to still produce even though he gets that extra attention.
Let's go to Billy Jaffe is just hopped into the studio.
I'm
he's
coming
got a look
a teeny
on his face.
Hot. Comment. And let's discuss this for a second. And this is going to come out being negative, but it's not. Krejci line.
Yes.
Last week we was touched on, that they'd be the first line you guys talked about for other teams. I don't know if they would. I really don't know. And that's not a disservice, or I'm not trying to discredit them. I'm saying production-wise, wouldn't they have to do more? Wouldn't they have to have more points than they have to be the number one line for other teams?
Wouldn't they also have more minutes to be considered that? I think when Rick Nash is a top-line winger, yes?
Has been.
Second line. David Krejci, points per game. Like, if you put this line, all right, we're looking at the Nashville Predators. Ryan Johansson, Victor Arvidsson, Philip Forsberg. Is that markedly better than David Krejci, Jake DeBrusk, and Rick Nash?
Consistency-wise, not having the numbers in front of me, I'll pull them up to. That's why I said I'm coming in hot. I want to get a discussion because
I think it's comparable. You put that line on the Avalanche.
In Columbus, they'd be the number. Well, Panarin had all the points, all but right. the
Is
other
it
guys.
Better than the Avalanche's top line?
Well, I'm saying on a good team. I'm not saying on an average. No, not with McKinnon. No, they wouldn't be the top line.
Nathan McKinnon and who?
Landeskog.
Okay, you're going to tell me Nash is not as good as Landeskog?
I'm saying in the past he was better.
And who's the other forward on that line?
That changes. Ratanen. Mikko Ratanen.
I'm just imagining.
Very good players.
I feel like Billy Jaffe's wife must feel sitting around the house listening to these two bicker about things like this.
But this is what's called hockey talk, right? This is what, you know.
Yeah, this is what Victoria and I talk about. He heads upstairs at that point. But I think on most teams, they would be a comparable number one line with the guys that you have up front that unit.
Well, I don't know, because Krejci needs to get, you know, he performs at an elite level usually in the playoffs, as you guys talked about. But regular season, they to be that top line guy, he needs to produce more like Patrice Bergeron, number wise.
Look at the numbers.
And he has the capability of doing that if he's in a first line role. I would believe that. Let's grab one more quick call here before we get
to I'm done. I'm going to look it up. I'm putting my cheaters on so I can actually read now.
Gary, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Gentlemen, good morning. How are you?
Morning.
I'm just tuning in to the show, so I'm sorry if you guys already mentioned this, but I just wanted to know Bergeron's status for tonight. Are they going to play him or?
Well, we'll find out hopefully a little bit more in the next few minutes, and we'll let you know about that because they're just getting onto the ice over at morning skate. The word yesterday, as he skated yesterday, is that it's, you know, more of a game time decision. We'll see how he feels and make a decision at that point. So we'll update you on that as we get the word this morning, hopefully. And but I don't. It may be that they won't know right up until warmups today exactly what the plan is, or at least may not say publicly what the plan is until they're ready to take the ice for warm-ups today. Billy Jaffe is going to stick around with us for the next half hour. We will talk more about the Bruins-Leafs. We will also talk a little bit about some of the other things going on around the league with some of the series wrapping up. Matt McCarthy's got Sports Hub headlines and another half hour to come here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Press the right hand, save. Let's go!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
As we heard during the Sports Hub headlines a few minutes ago, Patrice Bergeron is on the ice, and the reports are that he is taking rushes in between Marchand and Pastrnak this morning. So the lines are more of what we would have been accustomed to. So you got the Bergeron line together, the Krejci line together, Riley Nash back on the third line with Heinen and Backes, and you got the fourth line, Schaller, Corrali, and Achari back together. I mean, this is a fully healthy unit.
Yeah,
right now.
And Grizzlick, too, that had that game he missed with the lower body injury, he's out there again. He took another hit in game four, I mean. He still played his 15 minutes or so, but I'm always curious. Oftentimes you get that first game back after your first one day off, and you're like, okay, I feel a lot better. I had 48 hours and everything, but then you get back into action, you're like, whoa. But he seems to be he's out there, so great. It's a full boat, but I've learned, I haven't learned much in my life, but I've learned to be patient, meaning let's just wait and see. You know, Bergeron taking skate is a great sign, and they expect him. They probably expect that he can go, but let's see come 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock
right
tonight.
Well, and again, you go back to game four. It's like we didn't have any idea that the morning of game four that he wasn't going to play.
Right.
We obviously know he's dealing with something now. It's a good sign that he's out there, but it's no guarantee that he's going to be
nice
out there.
It's a nice sign that he's out there. This could also be just, Bergie, you just take the skate completely, and we have no, we're going to talk at 6 o'clock tonight. Everybody, they dress an extra forward or two and an extra D and warm up all the time, every playoff game.
Right. And it's, we know around the league there's some mind games being played, and there's misinformation being out there.
Yeah.
So, the fact if he's out on the ice yesterday, he's out on the ice today, and, he might still have something that they
think. This is going right into the Toronto locker room.
Yeah. It's like, well, we want them to be able to, we want them to not know what our lineup is going to look like.
Absolutely.
Potentially come 8 o'clock tonight.
Absolutely. So, plays a role in it. No question.
All right. Well, speaking of the lineups and what they're going to look like tonight, we talked a little bit before you came here about the return of Kadri to the lineup for the Maple Leafs. Thomas Plekanec has had an impact on this series once he got elevated to fill the role. And how, if you're Mike Babcock, are you putting your team together for tonight? And what kind of impact on the remainder of this series do you think Kadri ends up having?
I mean, this is the question that everybody, all 20, beat writers of the Toronto Maple Leafs are trying to figure out right now. I can't imagine that Kadri doesn't go back in and do a top, two-line role. As well as Thomas Plekanec has played, Babcock has spoken with him. He wants to keep him as engaged. And I talked to you about this during our podcast, about coaches who know Thomas and not having a defined role, feeling like he's a go-to guy with a distinct role doesn't work well for him. He had it the last two games. I give him huge marks. He stepped up his game. He's been a lot better. But it's Nazem Kadri. It's 32 goals, whatever he had in the regular season. I think you got to go back with him. Now, you got to have a smart Nazem Kadri back in, not a losing his marbles Nazem Kadri in. And I expect that tonight. I don't expect him to be cautious. I just expect him to be smart and not get caught up in the moment. The big question becomes, to me, it's not about Kadri because, look, you can move centers up and down, and they will. First of all, you're not getting a lot out of your third line, Bozak and Van Riemsdyk and Brown, so I wouldn't be surprised if your fourth line's doing better. He's got to play whoever's playing better, more, keep them involved more. And what about William Nylander? See, to me, that's more the question. He's been very, very, very on the outside, very cautious in this series. Not what we saw in the regular season at times out of him. So I'm not trying to get away from Kadri. I'm saying I think he comes back in, he slides into a second line role. But, they're going to be looking for more out of William Nylander to help out Matthews.
It's easy to look at from the Toronto perspective. And, after the Bergeron line puts up 20 points in two games in the first two games of this series, then, obviously the production, a major drop off in game three. In game four, Bergeron didn't play, so a little bit different. Mm-hmm. But, Pasternak still has two assists. Marchand has the goal in that game. What can they do because even in game three, where the scoring wasn't there, that line generated some
third period,
really
especially.
Good chances in the third period. Pasternak had some golden chances that they couldn't finish. As we talked earlier, it's just one of those nights for him. But they haven't really been able to find an answer for that line.
That's because their D as a team and as a unit, their defensive six is average and at the best.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, they're having a hard time matching up against them. That's where the Bruins have the advantage between Chara, Miller, McAvoy. You know, those guys, those three guys, even, you know, in some way, McQuaid, you know, certain situations, those guys that will focus more on a shutdown ability, they have that. Toronto doesn't have that. Now, Morgan Riley's been their best D-man, and he's been, last two games, I've really been impressed. I've always liked Morgan. He's a leader on the back end there. But otherwise, they're struggling to find that. And, yeah, your D have need help from the forwards, no question about it. But they don't have the D that can eliminate. Look, they're going to get their chances. We know that. Good guy, good players are going to. Mitch Marner's getting his chances. He's a hell of a player. He's going to get them. But it's not allowing the sustained amount of chances. And that's where a good D crew will eliminate that with short passes, chipping it out, knowing when to ice, when not to, et cetera. Just how to alleviate, just to gap off, close off and everything. Toronto doesn't have that. So what do? I don't think they want to start icing the puck more, but maybe that's what they have to do. If they believe in their faceoffs, which, by the way, they've been really good at in the series.
They have.
Just start icing it perhaps a little more. Now, that slows down their game, but get the puck out more and more. And it sounds obvious and easy, but it's not. Just get it out.
How about the Bruins defensively?
Not bad. Not. I mean, for the most part, I think it's been really good when they're in tandem, when they're on their layered, you know, play. I mean, I thought the third period against I know the third period on Thursday night was textbook execution of neutral zone and even forechecking and everything. It's textbook, so that's part of their defense too. I mean, as a crew, the D crew, I think, has been very good. Yeah, I mean, game three, they were off. They were deeped into their own zone more. They weren't making as clean first passes. They weren't handling the puck as well. I mean,
there was trouble at times in that game getting the puck out of the zone.
Yeah.
You know, led to the Matthews goal we talked about earlier.
You're right. But I would say, what grade would you give them overall through four games? And I would say it B plus, A minus.
I was going to say about B plus.
Yeah, you know? I mean, but the point is, you're going to have. It's just, you know, there's only a certain amount of straight A students, you know, every day in class. You know, every once in a while, you're going to have a B. And Kevin Miller and Torrey Krug, I would say, had a C, if not a C minus in that game three. And then they responded in game. I mean, how good was Krug early on in the series? Unbelievable.
Krug's been terrific.
Yeah. Well, it's game three. Kevin Miller and him struggled. They struggled. That happens. It's how you react. It's, you know, we always want it to be perfect every game. But again, raise your hand if you think that your team's going to win four in a row and not have a bad game in every series on their march to the cup.
But see, I also look at Torrey Krug and the way he has played in this series, and really going back to, you know, a good chunk of the second half of the regular season, where Torrey Krug has historically, for me at least, been. Look, this is an offensive-minded defenseman who contributes on the power play. He can be suspect in his own end. I haven't seen nearly as much of that in the latter part of the regular season and on into the postseason. He is, I think, turning into a much better defenseman in his own end, still being able to provide the offensive punch that you need for him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 59 points this year. I would absolutely agree with you. Career high, and that's great. And by the way, in his playoffs, he now has 31 career playoff games, and he's 22 points. I mean, he's not a point a game, but he's three-quarters of a point a game. Not bad. 70%, whatever it ends up being. But I agree with you. Here's the thing with Torrey. It's defending with his feet, but it's not always smooth. You know, Matt Grizzlick has that edge work, and Krug is more of a little choppier skater, a little more powerful, a little aggressive, just a different look to him. So I think sometimes people look at that and they're like, oh, it's not as pretty. I'm a fan of Krug's, first of all, because of the way that he competes, the way his give-a-heck meter is off the charts. He's got a chip on his shoulder, has had it since he's been in youth hockey and junior hockey, and he's proven it. And, you know, again, I think we always want these guys. A lot of times we get caught up in that we want perfection all the time. Yet then, you know, we don't understand that they're going to have some gaffes. They're going to have some mistakes here and there. That's part of the game of hockey. I mean, we all make mistakes every day doing what we do. Ours just aren't magnified like on the ice.
You feel like it gets closed out tonight?
I do, but I don't mean to sound like ultra passive here, and I know it sounds like it, but I'm not one of those guys. Like, I thought, okay, Pitt's going to win, they're going to be home, but I always have the thing in the back of my mind is that I understand, I see how teams are, I see how games can go. Yeah, I mean, the instinct for me is that it's going to be a Bruins victory feels right tonight, but you know what? I don't see it being a 5-1, 5-2 game. I mean, I see this letting it go. I mean, can they come out like Winnipeg did? See, Winnipeg was playing a team in mini last night that was so depleted, first of all, and just not as good as them. Really not as good. I know the Bruins are better than Toronto, but Toronto's still a hell of a team.
There's not that big of a jump between these two teams.
No. Defensively, and you know what else there is a discrepancy? Experience. Bruins have it with Chara, the Bergeron, the Backes, et cetera. You don't hit nearly. You have Marlowe. You have a little bit in Polak. You got a little bit. I mean, Hainsey's a veteran guy, but remember, he just made it to the playoffs last year for the first time in his career. I mean, I'm thrilled for Ron Hainsey that he's getting this near the end of his career. But when it's all said and done, the overall experience favors the Bees. But, they got a good chance at it tonight. How's that for brutal analysis?
Really going out on a limb there,
Billy. That's crazy. Yeah, I know.
Let's talk for just the final few minutes here about some of the other series. You mentioned the Philly-Pittsburgh series. Game 5 last night, Philadelphia 4-2 win, able to keep themselves alive. Oof. Look, you know going into that series, you know, Philly-Pittsburgh, like, Pittsburgh is clearly the better team,
yeah.
But Philadelphia is always going to be more than a speed bump for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I would be shocked if Pitt doesn't win the next game tomorrow. Shocked. I mean, flabbergasted if they don't. Now, okay, I thought a Pitt in 6 or maybe 7. So I guess it's playing out that way. I'll be shocked if they don't win. I mean, Michael Neuwirth came through. At times, it didn't look pretty for them. They weren't sure they were going to start Elliott and Nett. Or Neuwirth gets a start from Dave Hackstall. Good move right there. Can he do it again? I'm not convinced that he can, bud. I'm not convinced that he can sustain it again. I'll tell you who was outstanding last night was Ivan Provorov, the defenseman. He's like, he's up there, man. He's a left shot version of like Charlie McAvoy. He's one of those great young guns defensemen in the NHL that can play a lot, can do a lot. The other guy that had a beautiful night, and I'll compare him to Patrice Bergeron. I'm not saying he is Patrice Bergeron, but their version of Sean Couturier came out after missing a game, was hurt.
Right, he got hurt in practice earlier this week, and you talk about...
He came out, man. He was good.
Yeah.
He gutted it out. They did it. They found a way. I'll be shocked, though, if Pitt doesn't win tomorrow.
Game 5 today for Columbus and Washington.
Yeah, this is the toughest one.
This is a hell of a series so far, and Columbus wins a couple of overtime games in Washington in games 1 and 2. Washington comes back basically with their season on the line on the road and wins a double overtime game in game 3, beats Columbus again on Thursday night in game 4, and so now, the road team has won all 4 games of this series, and game 5 today in Washington, and we talked about it last week. The pressure is firmly on Washington because of their early flameouts in the playoffs historically.
But now the pressure's on Columbus.
And now Columbus, you had 2-0 going home for 2 more games, and you couldn't even win one, and now you got a best-of-3 series on your hands.
Yeah, the pressure's on Columbus because it's not that they lost, it's how they lost. They looked like a team that was a little timid. They looked like a team that was not sure. They looked like a team that said, we knew we got up 2-0. Boy, if we lose these next 2 games, we might be really screwed. Instead of saying, look, let's play our best. And if we lose, so what? We're right back. We've shown that we can win. John Carlson has been really good in this series for the Washington Capitals. Ovechkin came out after game 2 and said, we're going to go in there. We're going to win. We're going to come back tied to Washington. And he was outstanding in game 4. He was really on top of it. His line got going. I feel like the depth battle is being won by the Washington Capitals the last 2 games. Now, how it bodes well, or does it bode well, I mean, for Washington? It could really bode well for them is that Holtby won the last 2 games.
Mm.
And because of that, the earth and the moon isn't being moved now with regard to Grubauer playing, which he deserved to start the series. Even though he lost, he deserved to start the series. He wasn't the purpose that they lost. But now you got Holtby back, and there's that little something now, I think, a little feel that's happening for the Caps. I had Columbus winning this series in seven. I'm not looking to jump off that just yet, RJ. But they, again, here's your analysis of the morning. They need to step up today and show that they've got some gumption.
Real quick, the only Western series that's still going is Columbus and Nashville.
Colorado and Nashville.
I'm sorry.
What a comeback!
The Hamburglar.
Oh my God! What
pulls
a story!
One out last night.
You know, I was doing the old watching it, starting to doze, all of a sudden it's 1-0, and it jolted me up, and I looked at it, and it was a goal off the skate for Nashville, and I thought it was going to be called a goal. A lot of people didn't. I didn't see a kicking motion. He turned his skate.
You're allowed to do that.
Which you're allowed to do. Yep. Even while stopping, you're allowed to do that. Now, they called it no goal on the ice. I get why. Anyway, so the goal's good. And then all of a sudden, Colorado said, screw that. We're going to come back. What was it, 4 minutes, 5 minutes left in the game or whatever it was? Bam, bam, bam. Again, I was doing the doze off and in, and all of a sudden I'm awake after they tied up 1-0. What a play by McKinnon, a pass over to Landeskog. They end up getting that goal, and it's 2-1, and Hamburglar, most saves ever for a Colorado Avalanche goalie in a regulation win in playoffs. I don't think he can do it again, though.
They've had a pretty good goaltender in the past, I think.
Patrick Roy, yes.
thanks for coming in. Always good to have you here. We'll figure out when we're going to do a podcast this week, because there will be one, but we'll have to figure out what the schedule's going to be based on whether the Bruins can close the series out tonight or not.
Yep.
So
sounds good.
We'll be watching on Twitter and all those other places.
7 o'clock face pregame, Nesson, 7 p.m.
7 p.m. for a full hour before you switch over for before the game on NBC, and full postgame. And, of course, you can hear the game right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub with Judd and Bob, starting with the pregame here at 7:30. We were back with you next Saturday morning, one way or the other, here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Stick around for Gasper and Murray next.